You are listening to The News Project, in studio. Brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of GNAT TV's In-Depth Series. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's News Project. It's a pleasure to have you with us today on Monday, March 28th. It's also a great pleasure to be joined by two of our local representatives who are here to tell us a little bit about what's going on in their respective committees. The focus will be on education issues. We're really pleased to have with us today State Representative Kathleen James, who is a member of the House Education Committee and represents part of the Bennington 4 District, or represents the Bennington 4 District with Seth Bongartz. One of these days I'll figure out a clever way to describe two member districts, but I haven't gotten there yet. And also really happy to have with us today Senator Brian Campion, who is the chairman of the Senate Education Committee. Thank you both for making the time for our discussion today to help bring our viewers up to speed on what's been going on in your respective committees. It seems like there's been a certain amount of discussion and activity with some various pieces of legislation and ideas being thrown around. So let's get right to it. Senator Campion, I thought I'd start with you, if I may, and have you tell us a little bit about this a piece of legislation that involves allowing public dollars to go to independent or religious schools. I know that's been something that has been kind of part of the landscape in Vermont educational funding for quite a while, but I guess there is a bill that you're considering that would modify that or regulate it in some way?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Always great to be with you, Andrew, and always great to be with my House counterpart, Representative James, who does a great job on House education. So, yes, S-219 passed the Senate last week and is now in House education. And what we tried to do with S-219 was to put safeguards really around religious schools from using public tuition dollars in certain ways. And those ways being to support religious instruction, religious indoctrination, religious worship, or the propagation of religious views. In the bill, we also require that any independent schools that receive public funds comply with all federal and state anti-discrimination laws applicable to Vermont public schools. We also expanded dual enrollment, and we limited where some dollars can go from tuitioning towns with regard to independent schools. Let me bring you back to the situation, if I may, that the state's been dealing with. Back in 1999, our state Supreme Court said that indeed public dollars can go to religious schools as long as there are safeguards around how those dollars are used. In other words, put some kind of safeguards around so that dollars aren't used for the religious purposes that I just outlined. The state never did that. The agency never did that. Back then it was it wasn't the agency of education. We had a commissioner of education, Department of Education. State board never did it, nor did the legislature. So we never really took those steps. Since that 1999 decision, there have been a number of federal court cases that continue to support that 1999 decision. And we know recently there have been issues of discrimination, and we also know there have been issues of these dollars, court cases that, again, have allowed these public dollars go to religious institutions in the state. So we were in a situation where we really felt as though we had three options around dealing with this issue. We could do nothing. We could ignore the courts. We could ignore that public dollars were going to religious institutions, and recognizing that there are no safeguards around those dollars and how they can be used. And if that were to continue to happen, LGBTQ students, faculty and staff would continue to be discriminated against. There would be no anti-discrimination policy that these schools would have to comply with. Dollars would, again, go to religious instruction, indoctrination, etc. It would be setting up these districts for lawsuits, and there would be a lot of, you know, confusion out there. So we really, you know, that was one of the options, really, was just to ignore it, you know, and that's, to be perfectly honest, what folks have done in the past. Not ignore it, but just not really address it. And we found that to be absolutely unacceptable. We really believe that it's essential that the taxpayers of the state of Vermont not be asked to to support discriminatory policies, as well as, again, we believe that keeping those dollars away from the religious uses that I outlined initially was essential. So we didn't choose that route. The second route was the way Justice Roberts and others have talked about this issue is that if public dollars go to any independent school in the state, then they have to go to all independent schools, whether they're religious schools or not. And so the option, the second option, which there is some support out there for this, is to stop all public funding from going to any independent school in the state. This would, we felt, drastically upset the educational landscape of the state, which I think it's safe to say my committee and the Senate clearly generally supports. We know we have our academies, we have small independent schools, we have special education schools, and we also have dollars going over the border for certain circumstances, usually having to do with the location or, the fear of, or not the fear of, but trying to avoid students being on a bus or being transported a certain distance. So we know we have this unique system. And the only way to really be, if you will, purists about it, I don't know if that's the right way to describe it, to keep all dollars away from religious schools, would again to be to stop all dollars going to any independent schools, any. So that would mean taking our academies, turning them into public schools. It would mean shutting down a system where, again, there are students that benefit immensely from these small little schools that dot our landscapes. Some families use them because they have an option and their son or daughter might do better in a small structured spot. They might do better in the public school, depending on the size. So some of those, all those options would be shut down, as well as our special education schools. And my committee felt as though, again, that that was not the direction they were interested in going. They, in general, really support this landscape. It's a unique landscape. It's a landscape that works for a range of reasons in this state. So we decided not to go with option two, which left us really with option three, which is the compromise that I outlined ahead of time. And it really attaches conditions to public funding, making certain that independent schools comply with all the federal, state, and anti-discrimination laws applicable to public schools, and then also creates a contract between religious schools and the State Board of Education that requires religious schools not to use public dollars to support religious instruction, religious indoctrination, religious worship, or the propagation of religious views. So that's what we ended up landing on. I have the bill in front of me, and I just want to make sure that I'm not missing anything. So this is where the state board, again, would go forward and create a contract. And in order to be an approved independent school in the state, you would comply with these issues, sort of criteria that I just outlined. And then you would get funding. And if you didn't comply, or if you decided not to, if you're a small school, you're a religious school, and you're not interested in complying with these, then you wouldn't receive funding. If you decided to comply with them initially and then you were found out of compliance, you would lose your public funds. So, you know, again, we were given those three options, and that's where we landed. The money also expands the dual enrollment program, which many of those watching right now will be familiar with, which basically says, you know, high school students can take, in the simplest form, a couple of classes at, you know, in a higher education institution. This gives students a unique opportunity to try college out. For some students, it's an academic thing. Others, it might be a social thing. We expanded that. The committee also decided to really limit where public dollars could go in this, in the United States. And what we decided to do was we also worked on a compromise that said public dollars can certainly continue to go in the bordering states in the province of Quebec. But other than that, we were not interested in continuing public dollars leaving this region, save for, of course, or in the circumstances when a student needed special education services, was on a 504 plan, we felt had perhaps a disability. We felt in those circumstances, families should be able to choose whatever school would best fit their son or daughter. So it's an interesting bill. We worked a long time on it. We felt as though it was our responsibility not to punt this issue to a future legislature. We worked with Peter Teachout, who is a constitutional scholar at Vermont Law School, as well as our own Ledge counsel, Jim Demaray. And we hope it, you know, the House picks it up and we hope it passes into law.
Interesting. There's a lot of issues involved in all of that. I mean, one might be how to ensure that the religious schools use that money for the approved purposes, which do not include religious instruction. So,
right. Yeah, absolutely. And again, this is something that the State Board of Education would work on in that contract. But compliance is some, you know, we would handle the compliance as we've handled other things in state government. It'd be a by complaint. And if a complaint were filed that the dollars weren't used properly, then the state would intervene, likely do some kind of investigation and either, you know, possibly revoke the dollars. But we know, and here's the key point that I continue to say on the floor, these dollars are going now. So the dollars continue to go to religious schools. We know there have been a couple of anti-discrimination issues. There's a woman and her wife moved up to teach at a religious school in the central part of the state. They were encouraged not to apply when they came out as being gay. We know these issues are happening. We know, again, that dollars, public dollars are being used at schools that are not complying with anti-discrimination policies. And we're trying to put in some safeguards to protect that.
All right. Well, Senator, Representative James, over to you for hear you tell us a little bit about this other bill that your committee, I guess, has been working on that at least in part involves continuing funding for school breakfasts and lunches. I guess that was, one product, I guess, of the COVID epidemic. The hope is to continue doing that after, as we go forward.
That's right. And we're going to be taking testimony, by the way, on S-219 starting this next week. So really looking forward to diving into that bill. And Senator Campion did a great job of outlining why it's so critically important. S-100 is a bill that actually came over to us last year at the end of the session, but House Education didn't have time to take it up. So we are diving in now. And Andrew, as you explained, every public school in Vermont has been offering free meals to all of its students with no charge to families for the past 2 years as a result of USDA waivers. So basically, the federal government has been paying during the pandemic to provide free meals to every public school student across the state, breakfast and lunch. We've been taking a tremendous amount of testimony from schools urging us not to roll back that program. The federal waivers end in June. So at the end of this school year, the federal money runs out. And our choices are to try to find a way to keep that program going, or to revert to our previous system of free and reduced lunch, where families and students are very familiar with this system. Some students qualify for free and reduced meals, and others pay full price. There's quite a bit, despite efforts to erase it, there remains quite a bit of stigma still around the free and reduced lunch program. That's a reason not to continue with that old method. The other reason is that school nutrition and uptake of this program has really increased during the pandemic. When schools are able to offer free meals for all without, worrying about how who's paying for it, I guess, and how, there's been a real increase in kids eating healthy, nutritious lunches in school. And we all know that that's a really important equity lever. That's a way to make sure that our kiddos are not suffering from food insecurity and hunger. Food insecurity has really been on the rise across Vermont during the pandemic. And so we've received, I would say, overwhelming testimony in favor of keeping this program going. So what it really comes down to is the money. The Senate bill came over without a funding source attached. Like I said, the bill's a year old. And at the time that that bill was passed, the federal waivers were still in effect. So we're now faced with trying to figure out how to pay for this. If it's a popular program that people want to keep going, we need to find the dollars. An earlier, much earlier version of the bill would have passed this as a so-called unfunded mandate, which districts hate. That would mean that the legislature says, okay, schools, you're required to provide free meals to your students, and you figure out how to pay for it. That wasn't a very popular option over in the House. So what we're looking at right now are three possible revenue sources. We're going to start taking testimony on a sales tax on an excise tax on sugar-sweetened beverages, so basically soda. We're going to look at a sales tax on candy, and we're going to return to a topic or a bill that has passed the House, I think, twice at this point, which is a tax on pre-written software, aka the cloud tax. Back in the old days, if you would go to Staples and buy, say, Adobe, creative software, or TurboTax, or other software, Microsoft Office, you would pay sales tax on that. These days, everybody pays a subscription price, and you download that software from the cloud. Vermont is not capturing sales tax on that, and one kind of perennial idea in the House is that we could broaden our tax base and raise some revenues by taxing pre-written cloud-based software and hosting platforms. So anyway, if you tally all these up, they come to, I think, about $30, $32 million a year in revenue. And right now we're looking at estimates of about $35 million a year for continuing universal school meals. So we're looking at ways to pay for it, and we're going to start taking that testimony this coming week as well.
Interesting. Senator Campion, back over to you. I guess wanted to ask you to tell us a little bit about the status of this other bill. I think it's S-287, if I've got this correct here, where you gave a preliminary approval to a bill that would update the state's funding formula. Always a tricky subject, fraught with political peril, I'm sure. And there's also a piece, and this also ties into the waiting study that Representative James and her committee was working on earlier. So I definitely want to hear her comments on this. But what is in that Senate bill that your colleagues in the Senate passed, or I guess it was last week, about the state school funding formula?
Sure. If I could also first just respond, add a little bit to S-100, which Representative James just mentioned in terms of the universal school meals. The other piece that I like about this bill, and I really appreciate everything that the House is doing on it, is I also see it not only as an equity issue and good for kids in so many ways, but it's also an economic development bill for farmers. It really is. It creates a level of predictability. If you're going to start a farm, if you have a small farm, if you're thinking about having a small farm, knowing that your dollars, that your produce can be purchased and would be purchased locally is huge. I mean, that kind of predictability we've heard from farmers, you know, farmers appreciate that like any business. And we also know that a lot of young people more and more are interested in farming. So I'm excited that the House is taking this up. I'm excited about the, some of the finance, you know, financing approaches that they're looking at to address it. And, I'm really optimistic that the governor is going to be equally as excited, and we'll get this one hopefully over the finish line. And then, yes, as it relates to what we sent over to the House, this is Representative James and a number of legislators over this past year worked on what we've all sort of come to know as the waiting bill, the waiting study. This was a study that came out of the University of Vermont that I think was probably passed, at least gave the Agency of Education or gave the University of Vermont that responsibility a few years ago now. And what, and Representative James can speak in much more depth to her experience over the summer on this work, which has now produced a bill that has passed the Senate and is on its way to the House. And in the simplest way to describe it is, you know, how do we weight students? How, when we look at these issues of equity, how do we make certain that the dollars are there that are going to be necessary to make certain that an English language learner or a school that is has a lot of English language learners has the resources that they need? How do we make certain that students in rural areas where there might be a lot of rural poverty have the resources, the dollars they need to teach students? Special education, all these kinds of things. So we're really, what we passed and what I think both Ways and Means and House Education will partner on, as we've done on the Senate side with our Finance Committee counterparts, is working and looking at these weights to make certain that districts get the dollars that they need to educate our students as best they possibly can. We all recognize the inequities around the state, depending on school populations and the needs of different populations of students. And we need to correct this inequity. And I applaud the Summer Study Committee for the work that they've done. I applaud my committee for moving it along last year as well. And I'm really excited that that we've taken this step.
So, Representative James, we had an earlier show dealing with this with Representative Kornheiser, I believe, was on the program with us.
That's right.
Went into some depth around it.
It did go into some depth.
Did the bill wind up turning out like you had hoped or wanted to see?
Well, you know, it's interesting. As we talked about in our earlier show, you know, the weights are basically a mathematical way of accounting for the varying costs of educating different categories of students across districts. And the weights really represent a dollar amount, right? So the weights represent an actual statistically calculated cost differential of what it costs to educate, say, students living in poverty, or as Senator Campion mentioned, English language learners. And what we found out in this study were that the weights we're currently using are really outdated and they're inaccurate. So the bill, as it came over from the Senate, adopts one approach that the task force recommended, and that is quite simply, but profoundly, because it's a huge change, to update the weights. So the bill that the Senate just passed, that the House is just about to start taking up, corrects all of those weights. It corrects the weights for poverty, for rurality, for grade level, and for English language learners. It also does create a number of reporting guidelines around how districts spend their English language learner dollars to make sure that districts are spending the money to create a robust system for however many English language learners they have and providing those students with the support they need. The reason I mention that and the reason it's so important is that the weights don't deliver dollars to districts. All the WAITs do is tinker with the formula behind the scenes, and then districts set their budget and they set their priorities and spend their money however they want to. The WAITs are really operating in the background, impacting tax rates. So the WAITs impact tax and capacity, not dollars delivered. The reason I mention that is because the task force this summer did recommend an entirely different path that the legislature could take. In the Senate bill, they didn't choose this option. They chose the option of updating the WAITs. Another path that we could go down, either now or at some point in the future, is adopting a cost equity approach. And what that does is it takes those cost differentials. So when I said that the WAITs represent an actual dollar amount, how much more it costs to educate a student in poverty, how much more it costs to educate someone living in a small, sparsely populated rural district, the cost equity formula would basically deliver those dollars directly to districts. So if you have X number of students in poverty, if you're living in a rural, sparsely populated district, if you have X number of English language learners, you would receive the calculated dollars that you need to educate those students flowing straight from the education fund. You could spend those dollars however you want to. They wouldn't be prescribed, but it would be a way of guaranteeing that that districts have the funds they need in a very direct way to educate these most important categories of students. And I don't know if the House will choose to go down that road. It is changing the WAITs is a big enough change. Moving to cost equity would be even more transformative. And it would be, as we say in the House, it would be a heavy, heavy lift. And it would require, at the end of the session, the agreement of our Senate colleagues. So I don't know what's going to happen with that, but I tossed it out there because you asked about options. And the task force really did recommend two options. Personally, I think cost equity is a more transparent and direct way of funding our schools, but I don't know if we're going to be able to get that across the finish line. It's certainly an idea for the future if we're not able to do it now.
All right. Well, we got a few minutes left and a couple other topics we wanted to hit. Let me just start off real quick with them. State colleges was one subject we wanted to just touch upon. When last many of us heard about the state colleges, they were financially struggling and seemed to be going through some hard times. I know that the legislature has put some money into helping them out in the short run, but what's the outlook for them going forward?
I can jump in on that because we've done quite a bit of work on the state colleges on the House side this year, and that's all moved to the Senate now. But we passed a bill out of my committee that I was able to introduce to Brian's committee. That's H-456. And two summers ago, I served on the Select Committee on the Future of Public Higher Ed, and we took a really hard look at the state colleges and came up with several recommendations that the legislature really needed to do. One was to increase the amount of state funding that's flowing to the state colleges. They have been critically woefully underfunded for many, many years. And so in the budget that we just sent over to the House or to the Senate, we increased the level of base funding in state appropriations that both the state colleges and UVM receive. I think that is vitally important to their future, to Vermont families, to Vermont students, and to our economy. And then we also passed this bill that I just mentioned, again, following on the recommendation of the Select Committee, that takes a look at the Vermont State Colleges and sets down in statute for the first time some guidelines, what we expect the state colleges to deliver. And the guidelines we set up are very broad. We said that we expect them to deliver a post-secondary education to our students that's accessible, equitable, relevant, and affordable. And that bill has moved along to the Senate, and it includes a request that the AOE take a look at considering whether we might require Vermont high school students to fill out the FAFSA, which is, you know, as we all know, the federal financial aid form, as a condition of graduation, with obviously a bunch of exceptions built in, and also probably just a flat opt-out provision. So that's what we've been doing on higher ed, and that's over to you, Brian.
Yeah, I can just briefly say, I think in general, we like the work that the House has done. We're not sure about what we're going to do with the FAFSA piece or some of the language around what the House is proposing that the state colleges actually need to deliver. We feel as though that might need to be improved a little bit. That might not be the right word, but we really want to make certain that the education, it's one thing to talk about access, but we want real quality coming out of our state colleges. We want students to come to Vermont because the quality of education at our state colleges is superb, and we need to make some improvements there. We really do believe so. We're working on some governance language also that might be incorporated into that. I'm happy to talk about either now or another time. The other two things I just wanted to put out there quickly that we're dealing with, given the short time period, I don't know how long you want to go, Andrew, but our committee is dealing with the teacher shortage issue. We know that we have a huge teacher shortage happening right now. We are seeing the retirements coming. We're seeing people deciding on a different career. We're seeing it with principals and superintendents as well. We're working on that workforce development piece. How do we get this? Not only do we deal with it, but how do we make Vermont the best place to teach? Really start your career, continue your career, stay in this career. It's a serious issue. The entire country is going to be dealing with it. How can we, in particular, be ahead of this curve as much as possible? The other piece I know the House is working on, and I understand from the chair, the Senate put some language in last year around PCB testing. You know, this has been a big issue for the Senate for the past several years, making certain that the environment where our students go to school is safe and healthy. That has to do with lead in the water, radon testing, and PCBs. And I believe there's a proposal that might be coming from the House to postpone the PCB testing. The Senate is very concerned about postponing PCB testing for kids, particularly young kids as they're developing. We really think it's essential to keep that 2024 deadline, get people tested, really understand the situation, really move those kids when they need to move, and get them out of really what we consider to be harm's way. So those are a couple of things that we're working on. In addition to some of the other work, we also have some other bills out there, but I'm happy to come back. I know we had talked about this being a 30-minute session, so just happy to stay on as well, whatever works for each of you.
Just about out of time, but I know you also wanted to speak about the school mascot question.
I know
a hot topic up in Rutland. Is that going on someplace else as well?
Sure. You know, what I love about my committee is, you know, nobody wants to put anything off, you know, to a future legislature. We want to deal with the tough issues right now. And mascots, I'll be honest, it was a challenging issue for us to get through. We had heard, particularly from young people in the state, that they wanted a change. They wanted school board members, principals, superintendents, others to have some real direction on what would be an acceptable, appropriate mascot. In particular, the students that have been dealing with this issue in Rutland were very compelling. So all we really did was, we gave the Agency of Education, I have to really compliment Secretary French on this. He helped us with this solution. We gave some guidelines around what an acceptable mascot would be. You know, basically similar, we don't want discriminatory images, we don't want stereotypes, those kinds of things. Broad, covers a lot of territory, and the Agency of Education is going to put forward a model policy, and then schools have to comply with that model policy. At the very least, they can have a stricter policy, but at the very least, they have to comply with the model policy. And hopefully this will move us away from this issue once and for all. You know, I think a lot of people think, okay, this isn't that big of a deal. But the stories you hear, the research you read on the systematic racism that exists in this country, and to be a young person, I mean, we see it in Florida right now with the anti-gay bill. We see it with with Confederate monuments. We see this constant bombarding of young people and old people, everybody in between, of these racist, homophobic images and sayings, and we really need to get rid of them in our society. And this is our step at doing just that.
Yep, and that bill's come over to our committee, and I am really pushing for us to move it forward. We started taking a little bit of testimony. We had a committee discussion. Definitely some pushback in my committee, some folks who would like to not see that bill move forward, but I will be working to make sure that it does. And we'll have to come back. We'll have to talk more about PCBs. That money came over to us last year, very, very late in the process, with money but no program around it. And we've heard a lot of, at least some reasonably interesting testimony saying that we need to figure out how schools are going to remediate and get some kind of a plan in place before we move forward. But couldn't agree more with Senator Campion that this is a vital issue. I mean, we have got to make sure our kids are going to school in, sitting in classrooms that are a clean, healthy environment. And, we're going to have to tackle this.
It's interesting. You know, this is where I think we're going to really push back, I think, on the administration and on our good colleagues in House Ed. It really, we all know that it's these developing years where all of a sudden your kid's body's developing, and later in life, cancers and other issues develop. And, now 3 years, we feel as though that's plenty of time for folks to have identified the 300 schools that really have to be looked at and move testing forward. And I think we're going to really, as hard as we can, stick to our guns on this, because parents deserve to know. Parents really, and kids really, deserve to know whether or not their kids are being exposed on a daily basis to harmful PCBs. I mean, I've dealt with this issue down here with PFAS and PCBs. I mean, even as you can imagine, are in a lot of ways much more serious.
Couldn't agree more. So definitely, I guess, put your thinking cap on about, a remediation program and how these dollars can be structured.
The good news is that we've got federal dollars and we have a $90 million surplus. The House decided to give it back to taxpayers, some of it, but we're going to say, no, we need you guys to actually remediate this and keep kids safe.
That's going to be an even more. is going to be an interesting discussion. We have at this point divided the money between buying down the property tax rate, keeping universal school meals going for another year while we get a revenue source up and running, and then $15 million for a really interesting revolving loan fund that would allow our CTE centers to partner with developers and community partners in their communities to build things like housing projects. But we always knew. We knew from the beginning, Brian, this is going to be a really interesting.
No, I know. I'm just kidding. It's
everybody's
just Senate Ed always wants to put kids first, Andrew. I don't know why House Ed is
everybody's
going to
be fighting over the
us. Well,
it's been great.
I think we need to have you guys back next week so we can take up all the other things we didn't have a chance.
I'd love it. Yeah, it'd be great. We both do have, I have to say, the past couple of years, very productive for both committees.
Really unbelievable. And
really
working very well together,
work.
I think. You know, we sometimes have different approaches, but we come together in the end.
Yeah, no, it's been great. It's been really, really great.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for today, unfortunately. I got a feeling we could talk for another half an hour around all of these, but
all right,
we'll leave it there for now. We just want to say thanks again to...
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. That was fun.
You guys were great. Thanks.
Representative Kathleen James and Senator Brian Campion, good to have you all with us as well. Hope you found our show interesting, and we'll see you again the next time. Meanwhile, have a great day.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.